Thank you very much. So this is Leon Sanchez, and I would like to welcome everyone to this CCWG on Housing Accountability Plenary Meeting number 16 on Workstream 2 on April the 12th of 2017 and 19 UTC. Today we have a couple of items for reading in our agenda and a couple of action items to follow up as well. And I would like to remind everyone on updating their statement of interest or filing your statement of interest if you haven't done so. If you have any problems on doing these, please feel free to approach anyone on staff and they will be happy to assist you on either updating or filing your statement of interest. I remind you, of course, of the standards of behavior. Everyone has had the chance to review them, I guess. If not, there is a link for that, and we will be happy to post it so you can review those standards of behavior. Let's keep these conversations as civil and joyful as we usually do. I think that this has been a group that has been characterized as a very joyful and friendly group to carry on discussion, so let's keep it that way. We will be having also some administration issues. We will be going through a legal committee update. We will be doing some updates and presentations by the subgroups. We will be speaking about, of course, the Workstream 2 extension for fiscal year 18, and we will be planning for our next plenary, which would be on Wednesday, April the 16th. We will also have an item for any other business. So if there's any other business, we will be happy to address it at that time. So with no further delay, I would now go to the administration items. And I don't know if there's a slide for that in our presentation, but we have some action items that we need to review. And the first one is that staff was to write to plenary list to inquire who is preparing to respond or knows of people groups who will do the good faith and transparency public consultations. And that has been completed. And, of course, staff, feel free to jump in at any time if you have any comments or clarifications that you want to add to this item. And the second agenda, the second action item was that staff was to publish SOAC accountability draft recommendation for public consultation, summarizing the issues around removing neutral from MAR in the announcement. And that is something that is ongoing. And then we have another action item, which is the diversity subgroup to decide how to proceed with the survey, and that has been completed. And I see Bernie's hands up. So, Bernie, could you please take the floor?
Thank you, Leon. On the SOAC accountability, all the documents are done. It's in process at ICANN web of being put up. So we're hoping that that's going to be today or tomorrow latest. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this update, Bernie. Then our last action item is that Greg Shannon was to prepare an update for the next plenary, that means this meeting, on the jurisdiction subgroup process and the current work approach and progress that they will be taking. And we have a space for that on the updates and presentation from subgroups later on this call. So, well, Greg will be, of course, presenting to that end. So we have one ongoing action item, which has been addressed by Bernie, and we will be completing the other one that's pending later on this call. I see your hand is up, Bernie. Is that a new hand or an old hand? Okay, that was an old hand. So our next agenda item is the update on the legal committee. The legal committee, as you might remember, had sent some questions to ICANN Legal on jurisdiction. The subgroup from jurisdiction have asked us to forward these questions to ICANN Legal. And we finally received replies from ICANN Legal this past Monday. And I would like to turn to Sam Eisner so she could walk us through in a very quick way through the different replies to the questions that the jurisdiction group raised. And I would encourage us to, as this is something that has just been delivered to this jurisdiction subgroup, of course we can comment and we can raise any concerns that we may see fit, but I would definitely encourage us to let the subgroup first review these answers, and hopefully by the next meeting, if we have some deeper thoughts or deeper concerns, we could take some time to address those. So, Sam, could you please take us through these answers?
Thanks, Leon. Hi, everyone. This is Sam Eisner from ICANN Legal. So I don't know if someone wants to flash up the document up onto the screen so everyone knows what we're talking about. However, the jurisdiction subgroup had posed to ICANN Legal a series of questions based on the concept of jurisdiction and where ICANN could be subject to suit. So where someone could maintain a court case against ICANN, and some of the questions in there also went to issues of choice of law, because one of the things that often happens in contracts, for example, is that the parties to a contract might specify in that contract what regime's laws would apply to interpret the actions under that contract if there was a suit about it. So there were two types of questions within the series of questions posed from the jurisdiction group. As it relates to places where ICANN could be subject to suit for courts, the subgroup went ahead, and you'll see under this number one, the subgroup identified the different places where ICANN is incorporated, such as Los Angeles, where it has hub offices and where it has engagement offices, and asked, are these places where ICANN is subject to litigation? And for number two as well, and if you want to make me a presenter, Bernie or Brenda, then I can help walk through the document a little bit more. I'm going to sync it for everyone so that I can drive for a second, then I'll unsync it so you can look at it on your own time. So number two as well then asks questions of, so you have the places where you're subject to, where you have your offices, be they hub or engagement offices. Then there are other places where you might have contacts. It might be places that you host meetings, or maybe you have contracted parties. Is there anything different about how you would be subject to suit there? So in general, the answers to these questions are that there are a multitude of factors that any court would need to take into account in order to assert jurisdiction over ICANN or any other party to a suit. And so, ICANN has, of course, submitted to the jurisdiction of some courts. ICANN has made defenses based on litigation, or defenses based on jurisdiction in some places, and it's been successful or not successful. But it's always a very multi-factor assessment, because it also has to do not just with where ICANN's located, but where the acts occurred and the type of cause of action that's being alleged. It has to actually be a proper matter for that court to take on. So those of you who are familiar with United States jurisdiction, United States jurisprudence, we have two sets of courts in the United States. We have the federal court, and we have state courts. And so there are certain rules that you have to meet in order to bring a case in federal court. Like, they either have to be based on an allegation of a violation of a federal law or a cause of action based in federal law, or there's a calculation of diversity among the participants to that suit. And so it's not always the case that any court in a specific location is the appropriate place to hear a specific matter. And so that really is kind of the holistic response that we gave to both questions one and two, because these are just very fact-specific items. Now, it's important to recognize that ICANN does not have any immunity from suit in any jurisdiction. So there's no jurisdiction that ICANN can point to and say it's totally inappropriate for you to try to bring us into court there. But on the flip side, it's not really up to ICANN to decide whether it's appropriate to be sued in a place. That's up to the court in any place where suit is brought. So then there are also questions about judgments, right? So one of the things that happens either at the end of an arbitration or end of a court proceeding is it gets reduced to a judgment. So if ICANN was on the losing side of that suit or action, then the party who won would have something that it could hold up and enforce against ICANN. And so that jurisdiction team asked about how, if there are jurisdictional limitations around how judgments could be enforced against ICANN. And so one of the things that we pointed out in our response is that there are many ways that litigants can have judgments, and we call it perfected in legal terms, but have judgments perfected to a place that it can be enforced against a different party, even if that judgment was from a different place. So there's a lot of rules and procedure, but there are many ways to enforce judgments in jurisdictions other than where a judgment is originally rendered. And there are also not a lot of successful ways to avoid the effects of an appropriately rendered judgment in the first instance that is then appropriately perfected against a person or an entity, in this case specifically ICANN, in a jurisdiction that ICANN is subject to, just by then trying to pick up and move. So there are some realities of timing that always have to take place. So as you see in the answer here, and this is on number three, we say, for example, ICANN could not avoid having a judgment entered against it for conduct brought to suit in 2016 by any of its presence in the jurisdiction in 2017. So let's say someone brings a suit about, you know, probably based on where ICANN was for conduct that it did last year. ICANN couldn't avoid the effects of that judgment by picking up and moving tomorrow. Of course, we have no intention of picking up and moving tomorrow, but that's just an example. There are also things like just general ideas of where any entity is availing itself of the laws of a place, where it's taking advantage of certain laws, and the ability for the laws of that country to reach you for other reasons. So we have an example here of, you know, even if ICANN were to move its headquarters outside of the U.S. tomorrow, again, which we have no plans to do, there are likely a significant number of contracts based on all of our contracts and everything that we do in the United States today, that ICANN would still be subject more generally to many of the laws applicable to those who do business here. Now, that doesn't always mean that there's the tie-in to jurisdiction to maintain suit, but there's many things that happen in the law when you're doing business in a particular place. And so we just wanted to call some attention to that. Moving on, so number four is really a question that for non-lawyers might not make a lot of sense, but in the U.S. particularly, we have concepts of general jurisdiction versus specific jurisdiction. So general jurisdiction is the idea that a company is generally held subject to suit in a place because of its overall contacts with that area. And then specific jurisdiction really has to do with where ICANN would be held to suit based on actions targeted or tied to a specific area or based on a court's specific jurisdiction over a type of matter, like we were talking about earlier, the federal versus versus the state court issue in the U.S. And so all of those are factors are essential to any court's determination about whether it's appropriate to exercise jurisdiction over the parties before it.
Excuse me, Sam.
And
may
the
I interrupt you?
Goes to venue. And venue is just that general idea of whether the court itself is the appropriate place to have the dispute take place. And so that, again, is something that really depends on the facts and circumstances of each case. And we have a couple other questions here that I'll just run through, and I see Cavus's hand is up, so then I'll turn it back to the chair to moderate the queue. And so the questions were also asked, how would you answer these for PTI as opposed to ICANN? So PTI is a wholly owned subsidiary of ICANN, and just like ICANN, does not have any immunity in any court or location around the world. And so we, again, have to look to the facts and circumstances of each case. Now, PTI is a little bit more, a little different in the calculus of, you know, if there's any ability for parties to base a successful suit against ICANN where ICANN has, for example, hub offices or engagement offices or where other employees might be. PTI does not have any employees located outside of the United States. Right now, they don't have any employees because they're seconded, but in the future, we're not aware of plans to change that, which maybe it will change in the future, but that's just how you'd look at it today. The people who perform the PTI function are in the United States. There are
Thank you very much, Sam.
About trends in the legal field and trends that might make it more likely for ICANN to be subject to suit based on the concept that we're all well aware of the world seems to be getting smaller, particularly through the reach of the Internet. It's much easier to conduct and to reach people in many other places than it was before. And so here we noted that we're not really in a position to provide a potential roadmap for litigants or provide any sort of admissions that could be used in a way to bring ICANN into court in a place that it might otherwise be inappropriate. But this really goes back to the facts and circumstances of each case. In each situation, these are decisions for the courts to apply. And then finally, this last set of questions under B, we're on page 3, are about choice of law and venue in ICANN's contracts. So the subgroup asked some questions about whether or not ICANN's contracts specify choice of law or venue and some information about differences among those. Recognizing that there was, within the CCWG report itself, that there was a focus on the registry and registrar contracts, we've largely focused our answer on that. And in that realm, we don't have much variation among our registry and registrar contracts on the choice of law or venue issues because we have base agreements that were approved through community processes. One was the staff, or one was the new GTLD applicant guidebook for the new GTLDs, and then we also have the registrar accreditation agreement. So among the new GTLDs, as well as the legacy GTLDs, we only have jurisdictional selection where disputes will be heard to be in Los Angeles or in Geneva. And then for registrar accreditation agreement, we have arbitration litigation must take place in Los Angeles, California. We do have other contracts that we have, of course, so we provided some information to the group about the other contracts that have recently been entered into for the performance of the IANA functions now that we don't have the U.S. government's IANA functions contract. And then also provide some information on the types of contracts we enter into for our general performance of our operations. These are vendors, they could be software providers, leases, We, of course, have meeting contracts. We have a whole range of contracts that we enter into pursuant to relevant procurement guidelines for the work that ICANN does. And so within those, there are a variety of different things that could come out of those, but those tend to be based on negotiations, and they take into account the types of considerations that are appropriate for each. Sometimes you'll find in contracts, and we have an example that we gave regarding the URID agreement, that there are times when we even would say that specific laws, different laws, apply to the conduct of different parties. So sometimes ICANN would be able to say, if, for example, in the URID agreement, that the conduct of ICANN is governed by California law, while the conduct of URID under the .EU agreement is governed by Belgian law, where URID is. And so each negotiation is very fact-specific. And then turning to the last question, so the contracts that were discussed above indicate if there are instances where different choices were specified, particularly for those registry and registrar agreements, because those are based on model agreements, we have not varied from the potential choice of law and jurisdictional elements that are laid out in those models. And so with that, I'll turn it back to the chair.
Thank you very much, Sam, for this quick walkthrough the replies provided by ICANN Legal on these issues. And I am sure I can read Cabo's mind, and I think that this discussion is best to be kept at the subgroup level at this point. And for that, I would like to thank you and, of course, encourage the jurisdiction subgroup to further analyze these replies so we can, of course, then have some iteration or feedback to ICANN Legal if it need be. So I, of course, see that Cabo's hand is up. So, Cabo's, do you have the floor?
Yes, good time to everybody. Very, very thanks to Sam for all of these. But as you mentioned, these details may be submitted to the subgroup. If what Sam said is in addition or additional element to the written reply, these additional elements must also be provided in a written form. Otherwise, what she provided already very good, goes to the subgroup, and at the level of the subgroup, based on the question, but not description, she may kindly reply to the question. So I think let us, if she kindly agrees, to continue the normal discussions and not to have this very comprehensive and kind and useful presentation at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cabo's, and I knew I could read your mind, so thank you for providing us this input. So next I will jump to our next agenda item, which is the first reading on the second part of the document of the human rights considerations. And I'm saying the second part of the document because, as you might remember, the human rights subgroup had delivered already the framework of interpretation, and which was already given a first reading on our previous plenary. But now we are going to go through the first reading of the considerations. This is something that begins on page 5 of the document that was circulated earlier this week. And last week. And for that, I would like to call on Niels Tenover, so to ask if he can walk us through these considerations for the first reading. Thank you. Niels, do we have you on the call?
Or am I Leon? Oh, sorry.
Yes, we can hear you now. Thank you.
Excellent. Sorry. Thank you very much for the floor, Leo. I can start. Would you be, please be so kind to pull up the document? And I would like to thank, of course, the subgroup for making this work happen. And as you all know, we have discussed, we have already had two readings of the framework of interpretation here. So therefore, I propose we continue to the considerations part of the document. I can stop. Yes, I got scroll control. Excellent. I see Cavus' hand is up. Cavus, please come in.
Yes, thank you very much, Neil. I want to repeat what I said at the level of the group. We have read this document and we have agreed with consensus. So apart from those who were not members of the group, it is normally expected that those who have already agreed with the consensus do not withdraw their agreement and continue to support what you have produced. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. For those interested who can also follow it here in the Google Doc, if they think more convenient. So we start off the considerations part by saying we're going to work on the considerations as listed in Annex 12. Now we started saying that ICANN is not a party to you, any human rights declaration or covenant or convention or instrument because it's not a state. Then we discussed the UN guiding principles for business and human rights. Where we said that no consensus was reached for the for the suitability for interpreting the core value, but they might be useful of certain aspects of them for the interpretation of the core value. So when it comes to implementing the guiding principles, might be relevant, but we have not done a detailed analysis of them because each SO. And AC, as well as ICANN, the organization, should consider that for themselves, how they will implement it. Now, then the next consideration goes into a little bit more detail that each SO and AC and ICANN, the organization, should find their way to live up to the framework of interpretation and ICANN bylaw. And it then goes on to correct the consideration where it speaks about commitment, whereas the human rights core value is not really a commitment, but is a core value, because commitment is a term of art that is also used for other language in the bylaw. And then at the end of this paragraph, there is the important addition that a particular human right should not be considered in isolation, since human rights are universal, indivisible, interdependent, and interrelated. So there should be no cherry-picking among human rights, and no human rights should be pooled for others. So there should be a balancing taking place, as there should be a balancing taking place between core values. So the next consideration asks whether how these new frameworks should be discussed and drafted to ensure broad multi-stakeholder development in the process. Well, then it goes again into the explanation that the GNSO, the CCNSO, and the ASO should all have their own processes to for policy development, and it should be integrated in that. And it also suggests that ICANN, the organization, should take the human rights core value into account while developing corporate or operational policies and executing its operations. And that this all should, of course, happen with multi-stakeholder involvement in its development and regular review. The next consideration was about the interpretation, the implementation. It says, of course, that the interpretation of the core value should first be driven by the framework of interpretation. And it is then suggested that the supporting organization could consider incorporating human rights impact associations in their development processes, but it's of course not up to the CCWG to tell the SOs and ACs what to do. That would be overstretching our mandate, and advisory committees could also integrate human rights impact assessments, as well as ICANN, the organization. And then the last question is, what effect will this have on the GAC specifically? Well, here we say again, ICANN's mission, commitments, and core values, including human rights core value, should be taken into account by the SOs and ACs and ICANN organization when considering policy matters. And the board will need to take into account ICANN's mission, commitments, and core values, including the human rights core value, in considering all matters before the board, which also includes advice given by the GAC. So that was a quick overview of the document. Now I have to tell you, and I'm afraid I have to disappoint my subgroup a bit, that I have done a bad job of being a rapporteur and a secretary, because one footnote has dropped out, and that one footnote should be after the in the first consideration, and that footnote is exactly the same as the footnote that is used earlier in the document when it can, in the framework of interpretation. So that is here when it talks about, however, ICANN, the community, and the organization could refer to any of the widely adopted human rights declarations, conventions, and other instruments. Then after that should be a footnote, and it should be the same as the previous one where it lists the different documents.
Okay.
I just saw that, and I see that mistake was made. There we go. So I've added that in the Google Doc already. So in the Google Doc, you can find it, the corrected version with the footnotes. And since the footnote is the same as the one earlier mentioned, where it also mentioned a variety of declarations and instruments, I'm not sure how bad this is, but I'm also happy to discuss. And of course, this is completely my fault.
Thank you for this clarification, Niels, and for this walk through the second part of the document. And if you are okay, I would now like to ask for any objections on this first reading of this second part of the human rights document. I see that Caboose hands up. Caboose, you have the floor. Caboose, might you be on mute?
I said that the non-inclusion or disappearance of the footnote is purely editorial matter, and we consider that we should reproduce it as it was already agreed. Number two, I think this document had already had one reading in a general term. It was sent back for some refinement, taking into account other elements. So perhaps either you complete the full reading at this meeting, but not have another meeting to have a second reading, because so many readings have caused so many problems. So I think you have to finalize that at this meeting. So I consider myself this would be a second reading, because it already was read first one time before with some small changes that now has been made, which is purification and correction and upgrading of the documents. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. I understand your concern, and I greatly appreciate that you want to make the best use of everyone's time. But unfortunately, the procedure says that we have to do two readings, and since this is the first reading of this part of the document, it wouldn't be appropriate, of course, to have this as a second reading of the whole document. So we will do as our procedure states, and we will have the second reading in our next plenary meeting. But thank you very much for expressing your concern. So I see that there are no other comments or questions. So, I see one question from Anne Eglin. Are we going to discuss the letter from the board regarding impact of the FOI? Okay, so I don't think we're going to discuss the letter, Anne. we can certainly speak about it. The board provided a letter to the human rights subgroup and the co-chairs on this issue, and in two or three words, what the board is telling us is that they have asked ICANN, the organization, to run an assessment of which impact would the FOI have on ICANN's operations, and they will be providing this assessment as part of their comments during the public comment period. So I believe that the board so far is okay with the work that has been carried out by the human rights subgroup, but of course they will be providing some comments to the document when the public comment period starts. And I see Cavus hand this up again. Cavus?
Yes, sorry to come again. In reply to Ann, I don't think that the letter of ICANN is addressed to CCWG, it's addressed to the quarters. So it is up to you to analyze the letter and to see what action is required, whether you want to reply yourself to the or whether you want to share that with the CCWG, but not at this meeting, at appropriate meeting, if it so decides. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. Well, I see your hand is up again, Cavus. Is that an old hand, or you want to add something?
No, sorry. Old hand. I'm sorry. Very sorry.
Thank you very much, Cavus. Okay, so I would like to thank everyone for carrying out this first reading of this human rights document. And now, with no further delay, would like to turn to my co-chair, Mathieu, for an update on the jurisdiction subgroup. And you have the floor, Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Leon. This is Mathieu Vey speaking for the transcript. And let me join Leon in congratulating the HR subgroup for this successful first reading and for coming up with a very impressive, clear, and very high quality of deliverable in this effort. This is a major outcome of Watchman 2 that we're about to finalize. We're now turning to a request that was made in the previous plenary. The request was for an update on the jurisdiction subgroup process, work approach, and progress. And I will not delay anymore and hand over to Greg Chatton, the co-rapporteur, the lead co-rapporteur, would be the politically correct way of saying this, in this jurisdiction subgroup for an update. And probably after Greg has provided his update, it would be good to hear from those who requested the update or were requesting a discussion about it so that we can hear the different views on the progress and work plan. But first, Greg, if you're okay, you have the floor.
Hi, it's Greg Chatton. I apologize. I'll need to step away, actually, for one or two minutes, but I'll be right back. Just bad timing. Hold on.
All right. No worries. So let us know, Greg, when you're back. But I think Greg provided an update, and maybe we can upload this update. A good suggestion I'm getting is to take the next agenda item, which is the one on the IRP implementation oversight team, and then move back to jurisdiction to give Greg proper time to settle and join us back. So the IRP is an update also on the status of the group and especially on the draft expression of interest for panel members. So, David, hopefully you're available, and you can give us this update.
Hello, Mathieu. It's David McCauley for the record. Yes,
Mathieu, it's David McCauley for the record. Yes, I can give it.
I can give an update right now.
All right.
And I'll get.
Thank you.
I'll give a brief update on the status of the IoT and then focus directly on the expression of interest. And I'm going to put a few items in the chat as I go along. In any event, the IRP IoT at present is working on going through public comments that were submitted to the first set of draft initial rules. These are called supplemental rules. And we have comments on issues relating to timing, challenges to consensus policy, joinder of interested parties, standing of claimants, conflicts of panelists, et cetera, et cetera. It sort of covers a broad range, and we're working our way through that, and we're making progress. It's a bit slow at time, but they're all getting a full discussion. The other thing I think I would say about status of the group on an overall basis is that we are trying, through my request, to move to a work method that may stress the email list more than meetings. One of our participants, Aubrey Dory, and I were speaking about this online in another call yesterday, and Aubrey wisely cautioned to be not too optimistic about this. But because we're working on discrete comments, I'm hopeful, and we're making progress. And for those who wish to go to our email archive and look, I sent a mail on the joinder issue in March that I hope might be a template for doing that. But we're hoping to work through on the list quite actively as well as calls. Now I'd like to focus on the expression of interest. And one of the things I put in the chat is that the bylaws provide that ICANN will call for an expression of interest directed at people around the world who may have an interest in serving as a panelist. The bylaws call for an IRP standing panel of at least 7 members, and there are in the bylaws certain qualifications that the members have to meet. And so ICANN has put together a draft expression of interest, and when I'm done speaking, I'll put the link to it into the chat. And they kindly gave it to the IoT to look at, to consider, and to come back and comment, because we in the IoT are sort of familiar with the rules and how this works. And so I think it was a kind and good move by ICANN, and we're doing that now. We're actually working on that now. In fact, I'll also put in the chat a link to a response I sent as participant in the group to ICANN with respect to the expression of interest. ICANN's draft, in general, covers a number of things. It speaks about ICANN and the IRP process. It mentions what would be the required skills under the bylaws and what would be preferred skills. It does the same with respect to experience, and it follows the bylaws in that respect. ICANN proposes staggered terms for panelists, which I think is an interesting idea. The bylaws provide that panelists will serve for 5 years. ICANN is suggesting that for the initial panel, there might be staggered terms sort of divided down the middle, you know. And the purpose of that would be that not all panelists be serving on the same 5-year term, so that all panelists might be gone at the same period of time and you lose a wealth or a body of experience. And I think it's interesting. We're looking at that and we're preparing our comments back to ICANN on that. Their expression of interest also goes on to advise potential panelists how to apply and directs them to the bylaws that will show them how their applications will be considered. ICANN, staff, board, SOs, and ACs will go through them and try and segment them into a well-qualified pile as well as just regular pile, and the well-qualified candidates from that, SOs and ACs will nominate the panels. So roughly, that's where we are right now. I did this at a very high level and be happy to take any questions. And then following this, I will put in the chat some links and some further explanations. And so I hope, Mathieu, that is sufficient for now, but let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I think this was very clear and useful. And I'm seeing that we're going to have questions. Before turning to the queue, I really encourage everyone on this call and in your respective communities to give this expression of interest call the widest possible reach. It is absolutely crucial for the IRP to get a broad, diverse, and skilled panel. And I think we're all very, we should all be very engaged in actually reaching out about it, because it's critical for ICANN's accountability as a whole that we get a very high quality panel. Having said that, I'm moving to you, Alan, for a question or comment.
Thank you very much. As the chair of an AC who is going to have the responsibility of participating in this selection process, I have to say that we're operating, I won't say a complete vacuum, in that we know everything that's known as far as I know, but it is far from clear from what is in the bylaws or what is currently written exactly how we're supposed to conduct this process. You know, we often endorse people for things like review teams or appoint people to represent us on CCWGs. As far as I know, the people that are going to be selected here are neither representing the ACs and SOs nor are endorsed by them as such. But it's not clear just how we're supposed to do this or whether each of us is going to pick two or we're supposed to participate in some communal process to select them all. Unlike a lot of the selection processes, it's not being done by the chairs of the committee, but it's being done by the ACs and SOs. And, the ACs and SOs, for example, if you look at the GNSO itself, not the GNSO Council, is a rather large group. And I think we're going to need some specificity and guidance as we go forward, and we're on a pretty short timeline. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. David, would you like to respond to that comment?
I would, and I'll respond to two things. One thing that you mentioned, Matthew, and that is for us to widely disseminate the expression of interest. I second your comment in that respect, but I would just mention to people on this call that, of course, that expression of interest is not yet out yet to be disseminated. In other words, ICANN has taken a draft and has given it to us in the IOT to comment. We will comment back. That'll probably be within a week or two, and then ICANN will go back to work to take into account our thoughts. And so the expression of interest will probably hit the streets, I'm guessing. This is purely a guess, anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks from now. With respect to Alan's comments, I think Alan is right. The bylaws are a bit perfunctory in this respect. The bylaws do provide that the SOs and ACs will work with ICANN staff and board to sort of vet the candidates and decide who belongs in which bucket of qualifications. And then the SOs and ACs alone will nominate panelists. By the way, panelists that are nominated in that manner are subject to board review, board confirmation, but that confirmation can't be unreasonably withheld. So it is a bit sketchy. We in the IOT have written to each SO and AC saying, you know, this work is coming your way. And we have, at ICANN 58 in Copenhagen, I made presentation to several of the SOs and ACs, and I've done some subsequently. And in those presentations, I alert them that this is coming. I agree and note that it is perfunctory. And I mentioned that the IOT, and I believe the IOT agrees with me in this respect, we've discussed it, will happily take on an advisory role. Obviously, we can't nominate panelists. That's not our job. But we can help to get organized, to understand the bylaws, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to communicate that again and perhaps start encouraging the SOs and ACs with respect to steps they may take to get themselves prepared. That's the best I can say right now. It's a fair and good question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Very important aspect that we still need to flesh out. Next in the line is Cavus.
Yes, I have one general comment, and that is that we say if the SOAC, or not if, when SOAC selects the seven, that it is subject to ICANN board confirmation. Suppose that one AC or one SO have seven members, and suppose that half of them or majority of them are rejected by the board. Is it a sort of the veto for the board without any discussion, without any argument saying that, no, I don't want this, and that's all. We have this this element in some other aspects somewhere else, but not in ICANN, that such authority, given that, yes, I don't want, whether they don't like it personally or whether there's something else. That is something we need to discuss. Second, the situation of SO and AC select these people. I raised the question. Unfortunately, the reply was given by David and others was not convincing. I said that currently, at least in some of the SOAC I know, there is no knowledge, no person, and there is no principles how they could go. I said that perhaps it might be good if there would be some sort of guiding principle for the selection of these people. This is the second thing. Unfortunately, they replied that no, each SO and AC is prerogative to decide whatever they want, so I have some doubt about the imbalance between the situation. One going too far in the scrutinizing everything, and the other is too simple and saying that is that, and then we would have a panel that may not be properly selected. The third issue is the question that you raised, Matthew, and supported by David, dissemination. What do you mean by dissemination? What is the vehicle of dissemination, and what is the modality of dissemination? Dissemination between whom and how, and so on. Are you ready? And the last one is another issue that I raised, David, unfortunately, although you may give the same reply that Leon gave me, which I don't like at all, saying that this is an issue for the subgroup, but David wants to simplify everything. Instead of following the bylaw saying that these people, they should demonstrate something, he said that demonstration is too difficult, so they would like to a little bit soften that and milden that. I do not agree with that. These are the four issues that I have to mention, and I hope that the secretary will kindly take that into account. Thank you.
Thank you, Caruso. On your last point, I think the discussion is open and if you can provide your view on this in writing on the list, that would be extremely helpful. Just to clarify and repeat what David was saying about dissemination, he was right to clarify that this is still a certain time away from us since the expression of interest is not yet out, but the point is to disseminate to potential candidates for the panel as widely as possible. David, do you want to add something, or should we turn to Sam?
I'll say a couple quick points. To be honest, Cavus's fourth point, I didn't hear it all that well, but I do think I have the gist of the first three points. With respect to the board not confirming nominated panelists, the bylaws that were adopted October 1st require that the board not unreasonably withhold confirmation. And so it would be a bylaws violation if they did unreasonably withhold confirmation, and presumably the empowered community or some aggrieved party could make a claim about that, ironically. Secondly, with respect to a guiding principle for how to do this, the bylaws, frankly, are the bylaws. And Cavus is correct. He and I discussed this in Copenhagen, and I personally am, and this is my personal view as a participant in the IoT, I'm of the view that the SOs and the ACs will have to decide amongst themselves how they work internally on picking or making a nomination and how they work together. Alan mentioned, does that mean that they have two selections per SO or AC? It's really for them to work that out, and we will help as best we can. The IoT members have developed a pretty good understanding of the bylaws, but it is a little bit perfunctory, and we need to work our way through this. Finally, with respect to Cavus's point about how do we disseminate, it's really unlimited. People may want to disseminate among bar associations or among law school faculty or whatever. I'm not sure exactly how that would be done, but it's unlimited, limited only by the imagination of people trying to get the word out to people who would be qualified candidates. Thank you.
Thank you, David. We now have Sam in the line. Sam, and then we'll turn to the next update.
Thanks, Matteo. This is really in response to Alan's question. I know that David's given some input on it, too. I think it would be, I agree, you know, when we had the CCWG Workstream 1 report, it came with this concept of, you know, having the call for expressions go out. ICANN would manage that process. ICANN would vet if the candidates are qualified or highly qualified or not qualified, or whatever the words are. And then we'd give that list of the qualified and above candidates to the SOs and ACs to then make nominations to the panel, and then those nominations would then come to the board for approval not to be unreasonably withheld. And you're right, we don't have a process defined. It wasn't defined through the Workstream 1 process. So I'm wondering what it is that we could do from a staff side to help support the community in starting to get some of that process discussion underway. I think we still have a good few months until we're at a point that we have that we'd have a slate to give to the SOs and ACs to consider. So there's some time to work it out. And I think we should also remember that this is something that's going to be a recurring process. So panelists will have a five-year term, whether or not there's a staggering or not. We know that in five years we're going to be doing the same thing. And so getting something documented with some guidance for future times, particularly when the IoT will no longer be in place, probably because their work on the rules will be done, and creating some documentation to guide future iterations of this might be helpful too. So I think from the staff standpoint, we're here to help. And so if there are ideas from the CCWG about how we can do that, or if there are ideas that you know the members of the CCWG want to take back to their chartering organizations and bring back for discussion, you know, if there's anything we can do from a staff side, we're willing to do that.
Thanks a lot, Sam. That's much appreciated, and I think a very good suggestion. The whole discussion actually highlights that there is a need to initiate this with concrete proposals about the process. Certainly the IRP implementation oversight team is a good forum to start this discussion with support from staff. I think a takeaway from this exchange, David, is that that's probably another task for your group to take on at some point try and mount this discussion with some proposals. Even starting with how can we interact with staff and bring that forward. I see Alan's hand just went up. Alan?
Thank you very much. I would think in parallel with this, we need to involve the ACs and SOs and, you know, clearly, presumably via their chairs. I'll note the CCWG may not be aware of this, but essentially we the ICANN and the chairs are trying to organize ourselves so that we can take action for empowered community actions. And we have someone, you know, tracking processes and making sure we don't miss deadlines and such. But of course, this is a wider community. This simply says the ACs and SOs, which includes all the ACs and SOs, not just those in the empowered community. So I think somehow we need to convene the group to start with of chairs, and at least once we have some idea of what they're going to do, and start a process going within each of the ACs and SOs for them to determine, you know, is this a community-wide discussion? Is it going to be delegated in each of our groups to a specific subgroup? And make sure that we're ready to act, even though it's several months away. These kind of things take a fair amount of time to organize, as we've learned looking at the fact that we now have to use the ACs and SOs to select review teams is something we still haven't gotten down pat, and we're already into the second and third one at this point. So I don't think we can delay until we have all the details before getting the ACs and SOs involved. Thank you.
That's a very good point, Alan. And I see David is agreeing as well. So engaging very early on with the AC and ASOs at the chair level probably first would be valid. Excellent. So I think we have a roadmap on this. That was a very useful update. David, thank you very much. We're now moving to the previous update on jurisdiction. And I think Greg joined us, is back with us, and will be able to provide us with the update on the jurisdiction progress and work plan.
Hi, it's Greg. Yes, I'm back.
Right, excellent.
Okay. Greg Chatton for the record. You should have a document that was sent to the list, which is our revised work plan and schedule for the jurisdiction subgroup being uploaded into the AC room. This is really being presented as a discussion draft. It was first presented to the subgroup yesterday, but it does reflect considerable discussion that took place prior to that time. And this is, in any event, more for to inform the CCWG. This is not a sort of any first reading of any type, nor would it be. First, we've re-emphasized our general approach, which we've decided in this group, which is that we will identify issues before going on to explore remedies. So if there is something that would be a remedy, we are not going to we should not be dealing with it up front because it may be a remedy that doesn't have any issue that would trigger it. Thus would be a waste of time to discuss. There needs to be broad agreement that something that's been proposed as an issue is in fact an issue for the group, and that the issue falls within the remit or scope of the subgroup. After we identify issues, then we'll look at remedies and determine how the proposed remedy would resolve the issue, and also look at any effects and consequences of the remedy, and also how the potential remedy would enhance ICANN's accountability, since that is the ultimate task of this entire subgroup. Is to take, or of this entire CCWG, is to enhance ICANN's accountability. I'll move quickly through Section 2, which is, a historical overview. We've worked on several documents. One of the first was the multiple layers of jurisdiction as required by Annex 12, and trying to identify what each of these multiple layers are and how they what their influences are generically, we then decided to move on to determine more specifically what the influences of ICANN's jurisdictional setup was on ICANN. We had significant differences in views on the scope of the group, which meant that we needed to pick a topic that was clearly within the scope of the group in the minds of all or substantially all of the group, which is what is the influence of ICANN's existing jurisdictions relating to resolution of disputes, i.e. governing law and venue, on the actual operation of ICANN's policies and accountability mechanisms. This remains a work in progress, with significant work being done on it. As the plenary will remember, we discussed whether the CCWG could ever recommend ICANN change its place of incorporation or headquarters location. While the subgroup did not agree on an answer, we did identify this as a remedy, and therefore we'll apply the general approach and put it aside and let's see if there's any issue that would require it to be reviewed. We then went on to discuss a fairly broad hypothetical, which we called hypothetical number one, which also remains a work in process. And for these documents, there's a feeling that we kind of lacked enough outside puts and certain information that would be helpful. So we're engaged in three essentially fact-finding exercises. The first was to develop a questionnaire, which has currently been posted, and which will close 5 days from now on April 17th. I think we've received about 6 or 7 responses so far, but as with any ICANN comment period or the like, we expect significantly more during the last few days of the period. We developed, we have a small group that is going to review and evaluate the responses. The first work of the group is going to be to come up with a method for that review and evaluation, which will then be approved by the entire subgroup. The subgroup also developed a series of questions for ICANN Legal, as you just earlier in this meeting. Those have now been responded to. Those were reviewed yesterday in our subgroup meeting, although we did not have Sam with us, but we did walk through them. And we're also in the midst of a comprehensive review of ICANN's current and historical litigation involvements, which are all posted on ICANN's website. And several summaries have been prepared and discussed, and we'll continue to do that until we have summarized all of ICANN's litigation, in particular looked at the any issues relating to jurisdiction and the effects of jurisdiction on the cases and what we can learn from that. And then we'll also, and last, we decided to stop our active deliberations on the influence of ICANN's dispute jurisdiction and hypothetical number one documents until we got the questionnaire and the questions for ICANN Legal and the litigation review completed, so that we can use those to move those documents forward. There are several open issues that we need to resolve in order to work in a most efficient manner. We need to resolve the scope of the subgroup. Some think that we are doing too little. Some think that we would be doing too much if we did any more than that. And we need to resolve what that scope is. Related to that, we need to better define the questions to answer and work to be done. We've so far been dealing either with the lowest common denominator that everyone can agree on or certain questions that it's difficult to get agreement on, and therefore answers are not particularly useful. We also need to clarify what the gap analysis is that we're supposed to confirm and clarify our deliverables, and with all that, we need to revise our timeline and target, which we're in the process of doing, as you see from this document. So our work plan going forward here is in Section 4. We're going to review and evaluate the questionnaire responses and hope to complete that by the end of the month. Same thing, we've done a preliminary review of the ICANN Legal responses. We'll probably do further consideration on our next call and see if we have any follow-up questions, either for ICANN Legal or potentially for any third-party advice. And we hope to at least finish this before the end of the month, maybe with the exception of a third-party advisor who decides that we need it. That will probably take longer than that. We'll look to finish the review of ICANN's litigation by the end of the month as well. And then also, as I said, we'll need to face the question of the scope of the subgroup and try to resolve that. This is page 3, item D at this point. We would be looking to any lists of proposed issues that have been put together in the past, try to make sure that we give appropriate consideration to proposed issues that have been raised and acknowledge them, even if there's no consensus that they are, in fact, an issue. But want to make sure that we are consider the views that have been expressed in the past, but without rehashing them completely. We'll also see if there are any new inputs or views. Perhaps we've all gotten a little bit smarter since we first discussed the scope at the very beginning of our work. We hope that ample work on this can be done on the list, and the calls can be used more to bring together work that's already been substantially moved forward on the list. We'll need to come to a decision on the scope of the subgroup and the questions to be answered. The scope meeting will be an important one for the group, so we had proposed to make sure that the agenda is circulated approximately a week in advance to promote maximum participation and also to allow for work on the list in a directed fashion toward the meeting. Finally, we would make sure to prepare a deliverable reflecting the deliberations and outcome of our scope meeting and work. Finally, or almost finally, we'll need to follow the general approach more closely. There's been somewhat of a lack of discipline, and perhaps I have not disciplined the group enough, in a sense, to stick to the issues before remedies methodology. Last, what we would do is take all of the inputs that we have, both the outside inputs and inputs from the group, as none of the outputs are from the outside are intended to stop us from looking at things from the group, and we would use those to take each of the existing documents, attempt to finish them, and with the goal of preparing a discussion draft for ICANN 59, and then to finish that afterwards. I'll see if there are any questions now.
Thanks, Greg. It took me a while to get off mute. Thanks, Greg, for working us through this and for highlighting both the general approach and the various steps that the group is taking. I think now is the time for questions to Greg or comments on the work plan, and it's very fitting, Cavus, that you raise your hand since you had been requesting this update, so it's good that you take the floor first. After you, Cavus, you have the floor.
Yes. First of all, thanks very much to Greg. I hope he will not interpret it as any criticism to his work, but just reflecting the fact. I see the discussion in this group similar to discussion in the Enhanced Cooperation of the United Nations and discussion in the IGF. Talking and talking and talking. And the no clear way. I think the three or four main areas that was highlighted by Greg, maybe at next or subsequent to the next plenary, we need to have a clear indication from the group that in the view of the group, how far we have gone to each of these and whether there is any hope that any or some of these will get to any results. I don't want to be classified as pessimist or optimist, but I see little hope that we get something. Every group will finish, but except this one. Then the people come at the end and there would be consensus by exhaustion that we can't progress anymore. Let's leave it as it is. And that is something that some people really want. That. The majority of the people, as I heard, without naming any of them, they are in favor of turning ourselves around us and around and around until the time that we are exhausted and disappointed. So unless we have a sign from the group on each of these areas that there is a progress to the extent that we are almost around some 50% of progress or 40%, then we could be hopeful that we get something. For the time being, I see little progress because any subject we put our finger, then we have problems and we go to the next subject. And then we go to the next subject. The only thing that I think has been more or less useful, that was this litigation, that people, they made a summary of that. To what extent that summary would be helpful, because there are a lot of questions in those summaries and leaving that. So let me tell you that I have a little bit of worry about the degree of progress has been made and when we reach at the end of this process in a satisfactory, mutual satisfactory, not one side satisfactory, mutual satisfactory of the people. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus, for highlighting your view so clearly. And I think you're raising a question that many of us also have, whether we should be pessimistic about the outcome of the group overall. Before turning to Greg, and obviously giving Greg the opportunity to comment, I think we should not underestimate the significant milestones that the group is going to meet in the next few days, or actually has already met. One of them is the ICANN legal responses. There's a lot of substance in these responses that is going to be useful, I think, for the group to digest and work on. And that may lead to significant and useful conclusions. And the questionnaire is another one as well. And I think we really need to look at these two in details before we reach a conclusion about whether we can be optimistic or pessimistic about the outcome. Speaking personally, I'm cautiously optimistic that there can be some very useful recommendations as part of the group once we drive it through the issue-driven approach, and if we can keep that route and stick to that approach, then I think there can be some very useful outcomes. But that's just my personal view here. And Greg, maybe you want to add a few words on this. Greg?
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton.
Greg?
Yes, I'm here. I guess I agree as well. I think that we are, we are regrouping because we recognize that it can't just go on the way we've been going on. So while Cavus's observations are well taken, I think we are trying to move past that. I would actually be quite curious to know what Cavus's proposals would be. We've quite good generally at identifying problems. I've been working on trying to identify solutions. In any case, I think we have a solution, which is to take these documents, the inputs, and to work toward completing these documents. And if there are any additional documents needed for deliverable, then we can work on those. But I think that it's critical that we define the scope, because if we don't know what our mission is, very hard for us to say how close we are to finishing it. And I think that there's been a lot of time spent on matters that are at least arguably not part of our mission. So we need clarity on that. The focus may be more narrow and less dramatic than some people expect it to be, but that is something that we need to work out. So that, I think, in a sense, it's premature to know how close we are until we take a clear-eyed view of what our group needs to do. So I think either way, I think the overall setup that we've put in place will bring us to a conclusion, and I'm optimistic that we'll do so. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. So I think a logical next step from the plenary point of view, at least on this, would be to have a next update in a couple of months once the questionnaire has started being analyzed and the legal questions, the legal answers from received from ICANN have been analyzed, and to see whether we can, we have identified issues and whether that helps in solving that scope issue, for instance. So I think that would be my way forward on this after this very useful discussion. I mean, just to provide a quick conclusion with a smile and responding, following up on Cavu's comment on enhanced cooperation as part of the post-WISIS discussions, I think we can all take the commitment to bring this topic to a close before the enhanced cooperation discussions in the internet governance circles conclude. That's going to be a race that I think we can definitely win in this group. Although it's probably not very glorious to finish before that. So thanks very much, Greg, for the update. Hopefully it was useful for the whole group. Good luck with the next steps. You certainly don't have the easiest group to and topic to drive through, and I think your continued efforts are absolutely outstanding. So please keep it up. Just give a very, very quick impromptu update on the transparency working group, because that was part of a message that was circulated by Michael earlier, that the public consultation is closing, I think, in the next few days for transparency. So the group is going to restart its work soon. To analyze the responses. So that's going to be one of the groups that we'll be hearing from in the next few meetings. So that's for the updates. We're now moving to our next agenda item, which is the fiscal year 18 extension of our work, a follow-up to our discussions in Copenhagen, where we concluded that we had submit comment to the budget operating plan and budget consultation that is currently open, as well as signify this request for extension to the SONACs and the Board Finance Committee. The PCSD, which is the small ICANN staff group led by Bernie, who is basically supporting us for all financial and resources matters, has been working on a draft, and I will turn to Bernie for an introduction to this draft before we discuss it. Bernie, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mathieu, and I'll wait until I see it on my screen, and there we go. This has been distributed to the list yesterday. I don't believe there's anything very complex here, so I'll actually walk through it very quickly so we can leave time for questions. The original there was not a work stream to budget per se. There was a transition budget, which included all the steps necessary to implement the recommendations of work stream one and the transition of IANA, and included work stream two. So all of that together had a budget of $8.8 million and was supposed to be done in 1 year. Of this, there was $2.4 million under the control of the community, as we call it, which meant, as we explained at the beginning of work stream two, the co-chairs would manage that part of the budget, leaving $6.4 million under ICANN's control. As of February, the cross-community expenses have been $0.2 million, so we have been frugal of the $2.4 million, and ICANN support had expenses of $4.5 million versus the $6.4 million budget. At its 10 March meeting when we were in Copenhagen, one of the results of our face-to-face meeting was the request to get these estimates done. So as Mathieu presented early on in the introducing this topic, we could post a comment to the ICANN budget. I would like to read this part out because that's the critical part here, I think. The request fell outside of the standard ICANN budget process, and the PCST and ICANN Finance undertook to work with the various departments to produce cost estimates for continuing the work of the CCWG accountability for all of fiscal year 18. It's important to understand that the request required a response in a very short time frame so that it could be validated by the CCWG accountability and submitted as a comment to the ICANN consultation on the budget. As such, the various departments, including MSSI, Communications, and Legal, rose to the challenge and in a short time provided drafted cost estimates based on Workstream 1 costs and their current understanding of the various Workstream 2 projects. So I really have to give a tip of the hat to all the various departments, and as Workstream 2, we should recognize that. There was no griping. Everyone put their shoulder to it and got it done. And it's not just the PCST. These departments actually did work and provided us the numbers so we could actually get that done. And I think that's important to understand that we got the cooperation that we needed above and beyond what was being asked for. So in generating a forecast for total, if we're going to look at the numbers for fiscal year 18 with a requirement that we stay in the total budget envelope, we have to figure out how much fiscal year 17 is going to cost us. For those that are not conversant with the time frames, fiscal year 17 began July 1, 2016, and will end June 30th. 2017. Fiscal year 18 will then start July 1, 2017 and end June 30th, 2018. So the PCSD, with the help of the various departments, put these estimates together, and basically you have the numbers. I'm not going to go through them in detail. What it says is that we're expecting to close off the year for the cross-community budget at about $281,000. Versus the $2.4 million, and we're expecting ICANN costs to close off at about $5 million for a total of about $5.3 million. Now, you'll remember there was a budget of $8.8 million, so that leaves some room for us to look at requesting that we keep working within that envelope. We then proceeded to do the work to see what extending for all of fiscal year 18, the Workstream 2, would cost. And basically, we came up with about $1 million for the cross-community side and about $2.4 million for ICANN support. And in there, I'll just underline under ICANN support, we've got staff, travel, language support, and management, and communications and contractors. So really, we kept the same division as we had in the transition budget, but the brunt of the financial costs is under what was called ICANN support in those days, and all of those costs have to fit in within that remaining budget envelope. So we get a total estimate for fiscal year 18 of $3.4 million. So if we add it all up, basically the initial budget where the transition was $8.8 million. We're thinking it's going to cost us about $8.7 million to extend for all of fiscal year 17 plus the forecast for fiscal year 18, which means we're seeing this as basically a break even. Conclusions are important. Based on this work, it's estimated that extending the CCWG accountability workstream 2 for all of fiscal year 18 would cost $3.4 million, which would bring the total estimated cost for the transition to $8.7 million, which would still be within the budgetary envelope of $8.8 million originally allocated to the transition. Should these cost estimates be accepted and Workstream 2 extended for fiscal year 18, a formal budget based on that work would need to be developed by the PCST and ICANN Finance. I will add two notes to this. Please. The first is the budget that was allocated of $8.8 million was for fiscal year 17. So we are asking for a bit of a special treatment here. We agree we didn't spend all that money, or at least we're not forecasting to spend all that money, but still, that's not how the budget mechanics work in ICANN. So let's be clear about that. And the second thing, these are not what I would call back-of-the-envelope calculations. They're not detailed. As I mentioned earlier, everyone got really rushed to get this done, and we've done our best. And we believe that all in all, it's all going to fit in there. But if we get the okay to work with this, we're going to have to sit down and do the homework properly to take this home. That concludes my presentation, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. And before turning to questions, I want to put on the record and ask you if you can convey our very, very deep appreciation to the various departments who provided these inputs in such a timely fashion. And I know this was unexpected and not exactly what most of us within ICANN are very comfortable with, doing some extra budget this work. So this is another very strong signal of support from staff, and I think we really appreciate that. I see David's hand is up. David.
Thank you, Matthew. David McCauley for the record. Bernie, one question. What are the professional services fees for the CCWG beyond legal services? I think there was $200,000. I have scroll control, so I think there's $200,000 for that.
Could you ask your question again, please? I'm
yes.
Just not sure which part we're dealing.
It's the cross-community working group support estimating cost for, it's the estimate that comes to a total of $1 million, and it has legal $700, travel $100, professional services $200.
Okay, thank you. I have that. You will recall in our original budget, we had reserved certain amounts for each subgroup in case there were needs for special communication services or contractors. And basically, we've kept those alive. And the other thing that I should mention is that although we've kept that split, ICANN support and community support, if we do get the go-ahead to go forward, I mean, it's all going to be one pot at this point, but we will still be managing it the same way. So I hope that covers. I see you're satisfied with that. Thank you, sir. Any other questions?
Indeed. Any other questions for Bernie? Okay. I'm seeing none. So I think the action item is going to be for staff and the co-chairs to prepare a submission to the operating plan and budget public comment period, as well as a letter to the SOACs that will basically be using those elements to provide our request. We'll share that on the list when it's ready before we submit, bearing in mind that the timeline is obviously pretty short, but I think we'll do our best to provide everyone an opportunity to have a look before it's submitted. I'm seeing Cavus is typing something which is probably going to be a question for Bruni. Cavus, yes, the information that you're asking for has been shared on the list, and I hope you can still review it, it's all on the list. Good. Let's also remember on this item that, of course, we've been I think Bernie said frugal so far, but we need to remember and acknowledge that we're getting extra. I mean, the support we're getting in terms of budget and actually the quality of our staff support are top-notch support in the ICANN standards. So we need to continuously be extra responsible and diligent in our work, because that's obviously what's expected from us as a counterpart of this sort of special treatment we're getting. So let's keep doing this in this spirit and demonstrate that it's that there was value for money in actually investing in our group as ICANN is doing. So thank you very much, Bernie, and everyone for this. We're now moving to the last two agenda items for this call. The next plenary is on Wednesday, April the 26th at the brilliant for our the time of 500 UTC. That's our American colleagues always love. But that's the rotation. And on our agenda at the next plenary will certainly be the second reading for human rights, obviously. As a reminder, documents are due 1 week before, so April 19th. Next agenda item would be AOB, if there are any other business. I am seeing none. This was quite a substantial call with a number of interesting topics being addressed. Obviously, we've made some excellent progress with the first reading and two very substantial updates on the groups. So with that, I will now adjourn this call and thank you all for your very constructive participation today. And we talk to each other very soon on the various calls. Thank you very much.
Thank you.